You're listening to Community Radio,
KBOO, Portland.
Sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We're here with Natasha Pickens. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
Not too bad. Thanks for being on the show. Can you tell us about your involvement in the projects that we're going to talk about this evening?
I'm actually a criminal defense investigator who's done reentry work before, and I assist with the Uhuru Sasa Cultural Club at OSP to help them get community engagement and hopefully help them develop their program a little bit further through fundraising from community partners, as well as developing a nonprofit called Reformers Coalition, who will assist with men and women coming home from prison with a holistic approach and a trauma-informed approach to reentry services.
That's great. So Uhuru Sasa is based at the Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem, Oregon. Can you talk a little bit about the background of the group and the founding of it?
Uhuru Sasa was developed in 1968 after riots at OSP. They were developed by a group of men who made it their mission to develop their members culturally, vocationally, and educationally, trying to ensure that their members become positive contributing members of society once they are to return home. They helped develop African-American pride, again, education for their members and anybody interested. They are not a completely African-American club. They do have other races that are involved with the club that help out with a number of different things. They do a bunch of different programs for youth and for community engagement. They have people that come in from some of the universities and speak with them about different causes, policies, things that affect them currently inside, and then, you know, the future of youth in Oregon in the criminal justice system as well.
So Uhuru Sasa means freedom now in Swahili. Can we talk more about what some of the programming looks like and how that relates to I mean, specifically in this case, you said it's for all peoples, but obviously there is a good focus on Africana history and culture.
So they do a couple of programs, one a financial literacy program where the men are able to learn about budgeting, how banking works, being able to open bank accounts so that they can save money for when they come home, and real estate. They do real estate classes. Just anything that relates to what someone would need to be in society. They try to facilitate and engage with organizations that provide job training to come in and do meetings with the community inside and out. They have a youth program right now that helps them learn how to talk about what they've been through, but also gives the youth a space to speak about what they are currently going through to help them not offend, which is probably their biggest program that they do. And it helps the men inside and it helps the youth to be able to see the various outcomes when they make decisions.
Can you talk more about the youth program and how that works as far as dialoguing in and outside of the facilities?
Right. So Uhuru Sasa has been organizing with SCI out of Portland and hoping to coordinate with a couple of organizations in the Salem-Keizer School District to be able to bring youth in. They come in about eight months out of the year, and they talk about everything from decision-making, life skills, parents, friends, peer pressure, pretty much anything that could relate to things that juveniles are going through today. There's always a volunteer that brings in the group of youth. And right now, I think they are trying to find more organizations to work with for youth to be able to have a wider footprint in Oregon. Right now, they're really relatively slowed to the valley.
So when it comes to actually visiting inside on several different levels as you know, visitors for a cultural group, friends and family members, but also volunteers, can you talk about what that process looks like for people who might not be familiar with that landscape of actually going in to a facility to visit someone, to volunteer, to provide educational programming and things of that nature?
Yeah, they're generally the members, the president, or somebody from the executive body of one of the clubs will reach out to someone that they have been given information of, and or you can reach out to the facility directly to activities, and they will put people in contact with the various clubs they may be interested in working with. From that point, I believe that there is a verification process, and then whatever programs or services they're wanting to coordinate, they would have a meeting with the club executive body and figure out a schedule and who would benefit most from the program.
You know, Natasha, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with the fact that there really isn't a lot of this kind of programming that goes on in adult and youth facilities all around the United States. And the assumption probably there that, you know, people are, you know, some of the media stereotypes, if you will, you know, people are lifting weights and watching TV and all these kind of really mundane activities while people are doing all kinds of really amazing things inside. People outside doing amazing things who are friends, family members, formerly incarcerated persons, supporting that movement. And it sounds like that's a lot of, you know, what goes on with this kind of community interaction that comes out of these programs. So can you talk more about why the programming, not only is it so important, but really how, generally speaking, it, you know, it's really not happening as far as the state-funded aspect of these projects.
Right. So Oregon State Penitentiary is one of the only facilities, if not the only facility, that actually allows clubs to happen. And clubs for them operate generally like nonprofits, except that they don't allow them to actually have nonprofit status and organize the way that they would need to. The clubs themselves provide a unique experience for the men inside because they are essentially, like I said, running a nonprofit organization. They're doing fundraising, they're making sure that their inventories, their books are kept, they're reporting to the people that they need to report to, they're communicating as much as they can with their volunteers via email and hopefully Zoom, I believe. So I know that the impact to them on a business learning level is that they're actually getting that experience as opposed to having just a Oregon Corrections Enterprises job. So they're getting hands-on experience with running an organization on top of just the experience that they get with the volunteers, all the various people that they get to have come in and speak. The importance, I think, for most of them, it provides purpose in an environment where there's not a lot of hope. It provides direction, it provides structure, it provides accountability, and you're accountable to your community. And so I think that helps those people that are able to participate in those programs be accountable to the community because they've had to be accountable to the community that they've been in for so long. When it comes to state funding, I haven't seen a lot of state funding in Oregon in particular for any reentry services. I believe that the funding that I've seen has gone to policing and probation. There's an organization I know in Eugene named Sponsors Inc. And their level of funding, I think, is kind of apparent by the wages they're able to pay their employees for the work that has to be done for these people coming home. I know that a lot of these programs are grant-funded and funded through other means, but when you have a state behind reentry, it shows, and it shows in the programming, and it shows in your recidivism rates, and it shows in your jail population rates. And so I think that these programs kind of offer a different ability on the inside where they may not get the same opportunity on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get back to one thing that you mentioned, though, early on in that comment was that, if I heard you right, so OSP is one of the few or only facilities, adult facilities in Oregon that can have like a cultural club. Is that what you're saying? Or
at this time, that's what I know to be true. I know that the women's prison has been very interested in starting a club, and I've reached out or made effort to reach out to some of those women, just because I feel like this part of reentry is so important, because the work has to start on the inside. It has to. And so for people in prisons to be doing exactly what you said, sitting, lifting weights, watching TV, playing video games, eating, walking the yard, they're not being engaged in the way that they could be and could be best. They could best develop themselves if they had these types of programs and opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what you see in a lot of facilities nationwide, internationally, is a bunch of people who are bored with no hope and no direction and nothing to keep them occupied unless they have family to send them books or to communicate with all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that I have probably seen 10% of the population in OSP in the visiting room over the past 2 years. So I know that people don't have family and people don't have people sending them books, and they aren't able to provide for themselves in certain ways to educate themselves, because those opportunities just aren't available to them.
Yeah, so you mentioned places like Coffee Creek, the women's prison in Wilsonville, Oregon, and some other places that you're aware of that don't have clubs. What's your take on what's going on there? Why aren't there as many clubs at other places or the ones that just don't have them at all? And what do you think ideally kind of needs to happen in order to kind of get more of this programming into the different facilities?
I think that we have Department of Corrections and the community and family members have all looked at what Norway's idea of corrections is. Mm-hmm. And I know that was a big conversation within DOC for quite a while, and I'm sure it still is a big conversation. COVID just kind of interrupted everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But with that being said, I think having a more humanitarian approach to corrections, you can't change people, but people's ideas can change. And so looking at the restorative justice aspect of, you know, what's going to help these people be successful? What's really going to drive recidivism rates down? Creating opportunities for families to be families, even though one of the parents may be incarcerated, by providing opportunity for more family visitation. Pretty much the whole idea has to change. The thought has to change. You have to be progressive. You have to start looking at inmates as human and not just an offender. And that can be hard for some people, especially when there's been trauma. But I think that's where those restorative conversations come into play.
Right. It worked in South Africa, among other places, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I believe Norway, of all the countries in the world, has the lowest recidivism rate at 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that we have looked at that a great deal for reformers, and Uhuru Sasa, they have looked at what that looks like and trying to build programming that just kind of fits with those things inside and out.
For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with Natasha Pickens, wife of the president of Uhuru Sasa. And Natasha, you're involved with a lot of different things. It sounds like you are really at the beaten pulse of, you know, what's going on in Oregon, and also in the way that, of course, it deeply relates to your own, you know, family experiences with all this. And there's so many things going on kind of right now on the ground in the last, you know, I mean, basically within late 2019, 2020 with COVID, and then with the shooting of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter having another large reprise and getting a lot of people excited and involved and in places like Portland, Oregon, a lot of civic engagement, if you will, among other things. And so if you kind of can talk about maybe what's going on the ground right now with all these things happening. In fact, the facilities are still closed in Oregon mm-hmm. right now, and it's late August 2020, and we don't know, you know, what's going to open back up and all these things. So, but there's a whole ball of wax going on there. I know that's a few prongs I just mentioned, but can you sort of relate some of those things? I think another thing to relate is just the fact that with the work that Uhuru Sasa does with inside bars, how that's also making an impact within, you know, this movement of what's going on, and how that might be helping to win hearts and minds inside from people who thought differently about these different issues of racism and white supremacy, especially in a state like Oregon, where OSP, you know, has that you know, fairly high population of white inmates, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, again, OSP is kind of the phenomenon of prisons here in Oregon. So I know that we haven't had visiting since March 13th. So we're now at over 5 months without being able to see our family members outside of visitation via video. I know that inside, from what I'm told from both clients and my husband, they've been doing what they can to be receptive and conscious of the racial upset and unrest that's going on right now. Whenever there's an incident with a staff or an adult in custody, they definitely try to facilitate conversations and allow the AICs to have involvement and a voice. And I think that they've been actually pretty receptive to everything going on and just kind of conscious of what their own implicit biases are. Mm-hmm. And so it's been very helpful to be able to have those restorative conversations, especially with the executive bodies of all of the clubs kind of being the voices for a majority of the population. The Lifers Club too is, you know, a group of 150 men who are never set to go home. They have life, they do a lot of the same type of work and coordinate some work with Uhuru Sasa. But for them, for all of them, for all of the clubs, all programming stopped. No one was able to have volunteers come in. They haven't been able to have their meetings like they would have. They've just started now to get back to being able to kind of coordinate even Zoom calls so that they can start making movements on some of the projects that they've been talking about and working on. So I know that a lot of stuff has definitely started to restart a little bit more. I know the clubs in particular have been doing as much as they can to kind of fix and organize for the coming year as much as they can, and just kind of keeping COVID in mind. I can't tell you really what's going on at a lot of the other facilities. Mm-hmm. I know that visitation hasn't happened, and I know that some people have lost their AIP programs as their alternatives to incarceration programs because of COVID. So some programs that had to stop meant that some people weren't able to be released when they thought that they would be. So I know that was very disconcerting for family and friends, of course. It's been very difficult personally to not be able to see my husband. I think that personal interaction between families is very important, children as well, children especially. I couldn't imagine being a child right now and not being able to see my parent the only way that I can see my parent. And I think that there has been studies that show that a child has to be touched 8 times a day to feel like they have a connection to their parent. So 5 months of not having one touch is very impactful for a child. I think that's the biggest concern. I think that's the biggest concern, even above me and being an adult and not being able to see my husband, is the children who are negatively impacted right now.
Mm-hmm. So on that note, I mean, there's this whole aspect of you know, visiting and how that's, you know, stalled right now mm-hmm. with COVID. Another prong to talking about COVID relating to other things is even just life inside in general and how incarcerated persons are dealing with that. Now, you mentioned with the cultural programming, there's a little bit of a cessation of hostilities, and so that helps to maybe calm people down and maybe bring at least some cultural understanding among certain people and groups or what have you. But then there's the whole, this whole, you know, hygienic aspect and things like that, and where there's certain, you know, units that are on lockdown, and how some people, a lot of people nationally, are put in the hole as a result of this. Mm-hmm. And for aging and unfortunately dying prisoners, the larger national call in a, you know, for many cases around the country, for compassionate release. So mm-hmm. can you talk about a few of those things that are kind of going on related to COVID in that way?
I know that in the beginning they were for sure putting people in the hole to keep them away from other inmates. I had a client that was a 64-year-old male who called me from the hole a number of times. Mm-hmm. To tell me that he didn't have a pillow and he didn't have, like, it was very stuffy, so he wasn't getting the oxygen that he needed to be able to, like, breathe clearly and to feel like he was getting better. They were getting meals that are served to the hole. They are not your normal general population meals, as opposed to being given like the nutrition and all the things that they needed. They weren't getting those things. I don't know how much of that has changed now. He's since recovered and now back in general population. But I know that just even hearing those things is very difficult. You have people that are in there that don't have the greatest hygiene, that have just kind of been who they've been for their adult lives, and they just don't like to do those things. Yeah, you just, you become accustomed to a certain lifestyle, and just because you go to prison, that doesn't change.
Right.
And so I know that that's a big struggle. You have 200 to 500 people on a yard and 30 phones. I don't know exactly how many phones, I'm just guesstimating. But you have 500 people and 30 phones, and everybody's on the phone the whole time. Mm-hmm. You have to have sanitation practices. I definitely called the facility myself and asked them to provide them alcohol wipes, at least. I was like, if you're not going to do anything else, provide alcohol wipes mm-hmm. so that they can use the phones. Right. And so I don't know if they did that or not. But just, you know, it's been difficult because a lot didn't change, which is, I think, why you saw the spike, especially at OSP, where they had the most cases out of any location in the state of Oregon for a very long time. I know that that's switched now and that a lot of other places have that now, but for the first couple of months, they were like number one for cases in the state of Oregon, them in a nursing home. And so you look at that and you say, okay, well, they're not eating differently. They're still getting served all of their meals together. They're still walking in lines together. They're still, you know, they're doing everything together the same way that they always have, outside of they don't have activities and they can't go to yard. Like, they take away all of the positive things, but they make them continue to do all of the work things and then eating together and all of that. And so I think that some of those things have changed, and or restrictions have just lessened because mm-hmm. things appear to be getting better. I don't think that that's true, but they appear to be getting better on the inside anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think that DOC is being cautious of how they reopen to the public, to families, to vendors, to everyone, because once they open their doors, that spike has the potential to go back up. Then we all know that, you know. And so mm-hmm. I think that their cautiousness is not necessarily a bad thing. Right. Do I like it? No. But of course, yeah. I understand sure. from an organizational perspective, from an executive management perspective, I get that you have to protect everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're doing that.
And we're on the eve of fall and winter 2020, you know, and everybody starts getting sick, and especially if the kids, yeah. if and when they're going to, you know, go back to school. We know there's several counties yeah. in Oregon that are ready to go. For sure. Yeah. And September 2020, that is. Yeah. And before we have some kind of closing, wrapping up thoughts here, and we'll mention it again, but what are some ways, whether somebody's in Portland, Oregon, or in Oregon, wants to get involved with these kind of things, and or if they're just nationally listening and they want to learn about how to visit, how to help out, how to help start a cultural group, any other state, which of course they're all different, but just kind of what would be some basic directions to point us in, or links or for websites or whatnot?
Absolutely. So Uhuru Sasa is able to receive financial donations that are tax deductible through the Northwest Alliance for Alternative Media and Education. They have a website. It's naame.org. And you can click on their donate now links, and it will bring up various links that they have for you to donate. You can either indicate Uhuru Sasa, that would be the best way, this is to indicate the organization, so that we know where it's going. As far as getting involved in the community, even outside, we have people that come all over, from all over the country to come volunteer, or even to just be there for events. You can email reformerscoalition@gmail.org, and I can pass the information along to whichever executive body you're interested in volunteering with, and make that connection for whoever's interested.
That's great. Thank you. So final question here, just to kind of wrap things up. So kind of another two-prong question here regarding the work. I mean, I say the work that you do, but then, I mean, also just that you're, I mean, that you live the life of this as well. And, you know, all this super importance on this, the support with, you know, friends and family members and formerly incarcerated persons. And of course you have people in the community who are you know, kind of allies to that whole movement and struggle, and just supportive for various reasons that they plug in. And the second part of that is just how that relates as well to reentry as well. Because you mentioned there's not a lot of enough reentry services, and just kind of the importance of all those things and the work that y'all are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that education is like the biggest thing for anyone, I think. There's so many links to education and poverty, education and incarceration. And every opportunity that we provide someone to learn something different that they would not otherwise have thought of or considered, or allow someone to change the way that they think about something that may be negatively impacting their decision making, is always a good opportunity. And so I think that it doesn't matter what area you come from, what background you have, if you are the richest person in the world or the poorest person in the world, you have perspective. And I think that anybody that wants to engage definitely should, because either you have something to learn or they do, and everything that they can learn before they come home is going to help them make better decisions, choose better career paths, choose better education paths, maybe be a better parent. Everything that someone can learn makes them be a better person. And so I don't think that there's ever a reason why someone shouldn't get involved, especially because you just don't think that you have it. And then too, you have victims. Victims don't have the restorative mind that is needed right now. And I think some of those conversations, for someone who may not be a direct victim of someone inside of our particular facility, could stand to have some conversations and to learn about the people that have been offenders.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipelines at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Big thanks to our engineers, our guests, Uhuru Sasa, Freedom Now, and Free 'Em All. Thank you.
listening to KBOO Portland.